CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Villegas. Joining me today, remotely, Mario Martinez.
How's it going?
If all goes according to plan, I should be on vacation right now. I shouldn't even be in the country. I'll be in Mexico. This is not the Japan trip that I keep teasing. I'm actually going with my family. I'm on our typical kind of summer vacation, and originally it was going to happen later in the summer, but it made a little bit more sense to have it earlier. So that's what we're doing. It's for like a wedding and kind of combination family trip. But because of that, I realized I was going to be gone at least a week, and I needed to have an episode banked. And so I was like, hey, Mario, do you want to be on the episode? It's got to be cashed and banked and whatnot. And he's like, yeah, sure, we'll record. Because like right now it's well before I'm headed off, like maybe like two or three weeks before I head out. Randomly on a Friday.
So I think we should just talk about topical stuff so that when you actually release this, you know, it'll be fresh.
Well, if all goes well, the podcast awards should be over. Actually, no, I mean, they'll be done with nominations. But no, we're talking about in the pre-show, I think the least topical thing, but the reoccurring thematic between you and I is talking about horror films and just like the, you know, the weird, horrible shit that you have. Like, I'm never going to let you live it down that you own pretty much all the Hellraisers. I think aren't they working on a new one or a reboot or some shit like that?
I had heard, you know, I kind of heard they were. I haven't kept up looking into that stuff, but I do not own, I'll put it to you this way. I own every Hellraiser with Doug Bradley as Pinhead.
Oh, you mean there's more? Oh, wait. Hold on. Let's rewind.
Number 9 does not have Doug Bradley, and that's like almost a pseudo like shitty found footage. Like somebody made it for $600 and like a free sandwiches. Like that's is terrible.
Okay, I didn't realize that they had. Because I thought like that was like the joke was that Doug Bradley is, let's see, Doug, like since we're near a computer, let's see how old Doug. All right, even though you probably know, how old do you think Doug Bradley is, if you were to guess?
I would say that man's in his late 70s.
Late 70s.
That would be my guess.
61.
Wow. Like, my apologies, Doug Bradley. Like, if you hear this, like, holy shit. I said that number because I think you're distinguished.
do you want let's see what's on the list of shit that isn't Hellraiser. What's horrible is I take it back.
I've looked at that list before and I've tried finding some of these movies, but you know, I think one of them's called Prometheus. What the fuck?
What the fuck is this?
No, it's not Prometheus. It's
Maybe you're thinking of AG1 Adrift. Perhaps you're thinking of Shame the Devil.
Proteus. Maybe
your brain was The Misfits Tour Video Collection, the short where he played Abraham Van Helsing. I don't even know there was a short.
Oh my god, what year would that come out?
That would have been last year, 2015.
Last year? Oh my god.
I want to find this. Like,
I can't believe that. Well, I mean, I guess what else are they going to do? I can't believe the Misfits name is still moving along.
The tour, I imagine, the tour video for sure makes sense. I'm very curious what the fuck the short is in the middle of that and who the fuck Abraham Van Helsing is. Like, I wonder what the short means and what. You know, because like the Misfits never, I mean, I know that they always had the joke of sort of, you know, the horror thing, everything else, but
they really embraced it with the Michael Graves era, because I caught him, like, it's sad to say, 16 years ago. I caught him when Michael Graves was still the lead singer. And I remember at one point during that show, they had a guy dressed up like Frankenstein's monster. And, you know, they kind of wheeled him on stage and he broke free. And the Misfits had tried that they had done like a little like crappy wrestling on like WCW or something.
Okay, so they
so this Frankenstein like choke slammed a couple and you know shit like that and
okay. So then this is not so them having a short within their tour video.
Yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. Like Doug it seems Bradley. Like oh they I don't know recorded that over 45 minutes and like oh yeah, you know, Doug Bradley's part of the show.
So which movie of – okay, so there are only two movies in the Hellraiser series that Doug Bradley is credited for being part of the makeup department.
Oh, crazy.
Do you want to know the two or do you think you'd know the two? If you were to guess out of the pantheon.
5 and 6.
Surprisingly, 3, Hell on Earth and crazy. Whatever fucking one Bloodline is. I don't know which number Bloodline is.
That's number 4.
That's number – okay, so
– that's Hellraiser in space.
Oh, is that the Hellraiser in space, the Bloodline one?
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, 1996, yeah, he was makeup artist as Bill Bradley. They'd even bought – yeah. So, okay, so apparently he was known as Doug Bradley within as the credits, but – oh, man, this is so fucking funny. I think names – like how you credit yourself on names is always funny to me. Because, like, you know, typically, you know, you're like, Doug Bradley. And it's like, this one, as Douglas Bradley. It's like, oh, that must have been the movie he thought he was – that actually had some fucking talent to it or something.
Oh, you know what I really think it is? It's just one of those things where, like, you know, you see that a name's not really getting you any recognition or something like that. Or you just kind of break into it. Because if you look at a lot of, like, you know, famous actors, like, their yeah. first couple of flicks, they'll have, like – their name will kind of, it'll be the same kind of thing, but they'll either, you know, take part out of it or something like that. I cannot think of an example at the moment, but I've seen it before.
Yeah, it looks like in Hellseeker specifically, he was credited for Pinhead as Doug Bradley, but when he played, I guess, some random merchant, he was credited as Charles Steed.
Wow. That is a hell of a name, Charles Steed.
Well, because I think one of my favorite ones might have been Patton Oswalt's when he was on, I think, Aqua Teen. I think I forgot. No, it wasn't Patton Oswalt. It was oh god, what's his fucking name? He was in Arrested Development. The bald Tobias.
David Cross.
Yeah, David Cross in the episode. I forget which one, but he was a Happy Time Harry episode. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he like credits.
Oh, yeah, he was that little doll that like had a hook hand. And, like,
yeah, but he credits himself like a lot of the credits in that show are kind of weird. Like as Happy Time Harry, he was credited as Sir Willoughbus Brightsley Moore.
That's funny.
In fact, that's how he credits himself each time. I take it back. Like that's
as
a joke.
Bizarre as I think that is, like I kind of do the same thing, but I don't put it out there. I have an author pseudonym, even though I publish all of my own shit. Like as my name.
Right.
If I ever write kids' stories, because I've written like one or two, it's always under the name Nimbus P. Buttersmith.
That is the most steampunk name I've ever heard out of anyone's mouth. Like, does that motherfucker come out completely with a fucking focusing scope made purely out of sapphire
in
and jade?
Mind, you know what Nimbus P. Buttersmith looks like? He looks like Dr. Tot from Final Fantasy IX.
In my mind, that name is just like that man comes out and he's like, it's a bulbous man. He's got a cane in his hand. He's got maybe a cigar, maybe not a cigar. It depends. He definitely got a top hat, wearing you know just the most fucking steampunk outfit he can. He's like, time for adventure, children.
Oh yeah, I mean his stories are quite unorthodox. The two that I've written and I've actually like kept somewhere one was called The Day I Farted a Ghost and The Time I Dropped My Dog in the Toilet.
Okay, so here's the question I'm gonna ask to you, sir.
Yeah, what's that?
Especially because of the kind of writer you are. And sometimes, you know, may become. Let's say that, you know, everything else you've written doesn't take off, except for your kids' line of stories. But the people that are like, you know, that look at your book say, we like everything here, we think it's great, we just need you to make it more adult. What would be your adult's kid story that you write? Like kind of in the vein of like, you know, go the fuck to sleep, you know, when fucking what's his face did the audiobook for it, Samuel Jackson.
God,
like, what would be your funny, hip, joking, like, ah, this is a kid's story, or like America, a textbook, you know, when the fucking oh my god, what's his name, formerly of the Daily Show, Jon Stewart.
Oh, that Earth book, or
yeah, the well, it's like Earth America, something? Like something like that, like America, a textbook.
I thought that was Stephen Colbert.
Or Stephen Colbert, also that one too. Like all those are in that same sphere vein of me. You're right. It was Earth book for Jon Stewart, and it was America textbook for.
God, man, I couldn't Stephen tell Colbert. You honestly, because like even my tamest, like, what would be I put under my own name stuff. I mean, I guess you could just take out some parts and, like, I guess it'd be okay for creepy kids or something like that. Like, God, I think I just got a story out. It got published by this website called Dead Man's Tome. And that story, I mean, other than a couple of references to rape, I mean, I got to think you could take that out and that'd be all right.
No, but I mean, the joke.
The story's called Leonard in the Carousel.
Right, but the joke is that you make it. I mean, I guess, yeah, you couldn't have rape in a real traditional kid story, but I don't even think you could have an adult kid story. Like, I think ultimately.
And you'd be surprised. I mean, Erica, when she was doing her, her master's degree in library stuff, that's one of the things, man. A lot of young adult stories.
Young adult didn't count.
Well, I mean, even like, because she taught at the middle school.
Right.
Some of the books that are targeted at those kids. You know, they leave it up to the discretion of the librarian, you know, how, you know, if these kids can handle it. But I remember she was telling me about this story about it was like through the perspective of a little girl whose sister was getting molested or something like that. And that it was weird because the girl who was, you know, telling the story was somehow like jealous. And like that was the weird part of like this whole thing. And so, you know, she remembers her librarian saying, yeah, you know, we don't stock that book here. Just the. You know, just it's a hard sell. You know what I mean? But some of these books, man, I mean, because kids go through all kinds of weird crap,
I
guess.
Think of the idea of, I mean, like one of the, you know, classic traditional, and I say classic ones just because of the age of it, in terms of that, young adult story or young adult books was like The Giver. And like
never
that's,
read that one.
But it's like set in a post-apocalyptic world. You know, like, you know, or it's like a lot of the worlds are darker. Even take something like the Hunger Games, you know, one of the, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, God, the mutilation and, you know, stuff like that.
I mean, it's set in a world where it's like, oh, by the way, to keep the peace, you all have to send one of your oldest children to fight to the death in this weird gladiatorial thing. It's
but
like,
I got to wonder, man, if any of it has the same pop that it used to, like. If, you know, like Lord of the Flies, like one of the reasons why people remember that story is because it was so messed up for the time. But like right now, if they had released Lord of the Flies, like if that guy was trying to send out that manuscript, like people would have been like, oh yeah, the Hunger Games like went hardcore with your idea. Like, no.
But that's the thing is that like that's why we have the Hunger Games. Like we have, that's why we have things
well,
like Battle
Royale is the reason we have the
well,
Hunger
well,
Games.
I mean, Battle Royale, like, and this is why everyone always says like, well, yeah, Hunger Games like Battle Royale, which it is, but. I think the separation between Hunger Games and Battle Royale is that Battle Royale does a really good world-building job for a first movie. Like, if there was more Battle Royales, I think it'd be a different story. If there was, like, a longer series. I think what makes Hunger Games...
I know there's a sequel. I've just never seen it.
Yeah. Well, because I think what makes Hunger Games interesting is that, like, the thing that I liked about the Hunger Games had less to do with the actual battle itself and the whole, you know, the actual games, but more of just that impact of this world that has this, you know, very weird political mores and everything else. And a lot of these sort of characters that come in that just, like... kind of tell how they kept shit kind of the way it is, and it's like, you know, we keep the damn peace, you know, because it was kind of an interesting thing, and I always liked that take on the Hunger Games. Or you could take like Harry Potter, you know, the quintessential, another very very quintessential at least now fucking young adult book has a lot of dark. I mean, the beginning is the idea like, hey kid, guess what? You're a wizard. You want to know why? Because your parents are dead. How? To this other wizard that's going to kill us all eventually.
But you know, like as dark as that stuff is, man, I think that also, you know, as a storytelling device, we're pretty desensitized to stuff like that, man, because if you're going with, you know, oh, well, you know, it's for kids, but it is kind of dark. Well, you could say the same thing about Batman and Superman, Spider-Man, Wolverine. Name a superhero, and in a weird way, like, it always gets kind of dark. Like, I mean, Peter Parker, you know, basically failed his uncle and let him die.
No, for sure. I mean, there you can have darkness in something. I'm not saying that Spider-Man isn't dark either. I'm saying that, like, let me put it this way. You could introduce a kid or somebody's just like to okay, what was the cartoon? Because there was a recent Batman cartoon series that was, I think it was voiced by, what's his face from, God, what's that actor's name? He was with, I'm blanking on the damn series on fucking, he was the host, or at least the guy, he was on the show, the guy, the hostess of The Price is Right Now. Wow, what's the fucking show? I can't believe I'm blanking.
Oh, he was on the show with Drew Carey?
Yeah, the Drew Carey show. Why am I fucking blanking? Yeah, exactly.
Diedrick Bader?
Yeah, Diedrick Bader. He voiced one of the other.
Really?
Because there was a.
He's getting work, man.
Oh yeah. I'm actually gonna look it up because it was one of the newer Batman cartoons. I think I forget which one.
Tell you, man. I haven't had cable in years.
No, what? Yeah, and I kind of just found out about it through other things, but and only because I found out about it because the ending for it's like really, really good and kind of an interesting sort of take on ending the series. Like, it actually has a very kind of touching thing where they actually break the fourth wall near the end. It's a really, really cool series, but it's actually set up in more of a it's set up actually in. Batman Brave and the Bold is a series. It sort of looks a little bit more like the 50s Batman, and sort of takes on that style, sort of the campy style of things like that, but still does a really decent job of animation. You know, you could introduce a kid to Batman through that. You could probably, you know, be safe and give him that. It might be a bit hard to, as a sell to a parent or to any, even to a little child, like, what are we watching today, Mario? We're watching The Killing Joke. You know?
You know, speaking of, you know, like, you know, what more childish way to introduce it, man.
Let me give you year one.
Man, I was, just the other day, I bought Mortal Kombat XL.
Oh, God, the game?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Man, I was playing.
There's a reason
the first
why
time
it's
I played
M.
about it. No, yeah, the first time I played it, I was like, man, when the first one came out, I remember people were like, oh my God, this is horrible. Like, it's so bloody and so violent. Are you kidding me? That's like, you know, Microsoft Paint and Blood that everybody was worried about. Dude, and you honestly, the reason I got it, I was hanging out with a friend of mine, and we were kind of shooting the shit, and I said, oh man, I just saw this commercial, you know, Mortal Kombat XL, like on YouTube or something. I said, I saw that it has Alien and Predator. I said, that's pretty cool. He said, oh yeah, and it's also got Jason Voorhees and Leatherface. And the second he said Leatherface, I just, like, I had internally made that decision. I'm like, I'm not even a big Mortal Kombat fan, but let's fucking check it out.
Yeah.
The first time I got to, like, mess around with that character, I was like, oh, if there had been an uproar about Mortal Kombat now,
oh God,
I could totally understand, like, yeah, slap a rating on that damn thing or something.
Yeah, that's why. There's a reason why it has an M. You know, for those who are out there who are responsible of, you know, parents and look at their kids' ESRB ratings of games they want to purchase.
No, that's a holy, like, I'm a pretty open-minded guy. But I think I did one of those special moves, and you see one of the characters smashing, like punching someone in the nuts. The fact that it'll give you that kind of like musculature view of
the X-ray attacks, I think they're called.
Before they just explode, like just they can't take the pressure, and then bam, your nuts blow up.
Yeah, because you see, like
I could totally see how kids may not be prepared for something like that.
What's great about that game is I think you can earn it in the game as well as you can purchase it as kind of a DLC add-on, but you can have kind of the easy executions of the fatalities, and there's actually a fatality practicer.
I think because XL had all the DLC stuff that they've been releasing already, that was like a built-in option.
Okay, yeah, because like having the because the like there's a great video series, I think Achievement Hunter typically does, and they did it for this past one where they showed all the different fatalities. And it's like, damn. Like I would, like, there are times.
Some of those things are like, wow, man. Like, some people sat around.
That's exactly what goes by mind, too.
How can this person, like, how can they murder somebody else and it be, like, badass? No, the one that, Leatherface, man, I thought it was, I was like, holy shit, man, this is amazing. Because it was the first one I saw. I mean, I didn't open that up and play as Liu Kang. But no, man, it's takes a hammer, smashes the guy or, you know, whoever the opponent is over the head, buries a meat hook in the back of his skull, lifts him up, and then cuts him in half with his chainsaw until all the guts are spilling out and shit. The first time I saw that, I was like, wow, man. And, you know, the PS4, man, the things that it can do, it's crazy.
Yeah, how are you liking your new system? I think that's since we last talked, you didn't have a PS4 yet.
I gave up on Bloodborne because, holy shit, I am not I am not a good video game player. Because I'll put it to you this way, man. Like, I think where I left off, I've seen on, like, walkthroughs and stuff, that's, like, maybe the, like, 10th part or something like that. Like, I think I'm at, the 6th boss or something. And I was watching a video where somebody went through that, like, at level 20. Like, they just breezed through that shit, like, kicking ass and taking names and, like, amazing at it. When I left that thing, my character was level 78. 78! Like, they literally will say online, you know, you can go do all of that insane, crazy DLC content for that game. Like, you can do that in, like, 20 levels. Like, you should be okay.
Yeah.
I can't get past, like, some of the easiest effing shit on that game.
Well, because,
like,
Bloodborne, I mean, compared to the Dark Souls game, man, they're
no,
all...
like, I've heard, yeah. Like, Bloodborne is, you know, it's one of those games where, and I can see it, and I read somewhere that someone said, you know, the cool thing about these games is, yeah, they're hard as shit, but they make you a better player. Like,
yeah.
And I could see that, like, even where I'm at and sucking was, like, leaps and bounds better than when I turned that thing on for the first time.
Well, because the difference between, like, the Bloodborne series, and again, this is a guy that never played it, but watched a lot of Let's Plays and watched a lot of gameplay, and I can kind of tell.
I literally saw, like, a side-by-side of one of the Dark Souls and Bloodborne. Yeah. I was like, oh, other than the really Victorian feel of the city of Yharnam, I'm looking at the exact same game.
Yeah.
Which is not a knock against it, because I'll say, man, for as hard and frustrating as Bloodborne was, like, I did not mind going back and, like, just farming experience, farming blood vials and all that
you
crap.
You may want to check out, if you want to kind of lower difficulty and you end up wanting a newer game later on, you may want to check out Dark Souls 3, because I've heard that's a little bit easier and a little bit more straightforward as game goes.
I feel like if I get another one where it's like, oh, this kind of like action RPG, like, I think I'm aiming for The Witcher. I hear really good things.
Oh, yeah. If you've not played Witcher, yeah, you should play Witcher.
It seems a lot more like my style.
Yeah, you should definitely. Yeah, Witcher, that game got enough Game of the Year praise that, yeah, you should get Witcher 3,
soon. When I was kind of making my, when I got the PS4, I was like, well, which game do I get? And, you know, it really went on. I had heard a lot of cool things about The Witcher, even if it looked a little generic, like on the fantasy side. Like, I remember games like The Champions of Norrath, where it was pretty generic, but man, it was fun as hell. Like, I loved playing that game. I just played the other day, and man, it was way too childish, but the Tales of Symphonia, generic-ass like Japanese, like, RPG, but, you know, that's fine with me. And so, you know, I made the call, like, you know, Bloodborne just looks cooler. I remember seeing the previews and thinking, like, holy shit, like, I'm buying a PS4.
It looks stylistically great. It looks amazing. I mean, no, like,
stylistically, man, like, I'll tell you, all the different kinds of creatures that are coming out there.
That's what I was
going
to say.
Creepy as hell.
That's exactly what I was saying. Like, when I watched, like, the opening kind of gameplay stuff, like, there's these, like, hulking, tall, weird, like, men-looking creatures that are just, like, slashing scythe at you and shit like that. I'm like, that looks fucking
giants,
insane.
The first time you see some of the bosses that you're having to deal with, your heart sinks, because it's not like, oh, we're, you know, in a Final Fantasy, we're like, oh, that's a big-ass boss, but he only has, like, 5 attacks, and, you know, it's kind of like, you're used to that kind of gameplay. This one's like, oh, I actually need to dodge and move and try to figure, like, what I'm doing and read this movement. Like, again, it's really more, it's a lot more labor-intensive. Like, I'm just, I'm not that kind of gamer. I'm not I'm a maybe 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
If I get there, you know, maybe binge over a weekend or something. Like that's my level.
Well, because even with the Bloodborne, I mean, and only as a guy that watched it, like the game really rewards you for being an aggressive player. Like in terms of that, you can get your health back if you like attack really quickly at certain things.
That kind
of
took me a little. Getting used to that, like, oh yeah, you're gonna lose health, but the more aggressive you are, like, you'll get it back, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
And yeah, it took me a little bit because I was trying to sneak around a lot, and it's like, no, this is not a sneak around game. Like, you got to walk around in there, like, yeah. You're a mad motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
they reward you for combos and dodging and you know, rolling out of an attack and attacking from the back quickly.
It's one of those games where, like, you know. Once I get through, because I also downloaded, of course, I saw that it was there. It had to happen. The Final Fantasy VII release for the PS4 and the Banner Saga. I had seen I'd heard some really good things about that, and I'd seen what it looked like, and I thought it looked pretty interesting. But
developed
I know
by the, I think, I forgot. See, the Banner Saga was made by, I know the studio is based here in Austin. That I do.
Yeah,
know.
I had heard that. I think you were the one that told me that. But.
And by the way, the studio is Stoic Studios or Stoic Studio.
Yeah, but what? But I know, like, once I get into that lull of like, there's no games that I really want to get or anything like that. I know I'm going to go back to Bloodborne because, man, I mean, again, it's one of those my one complaint is it's hard as shit. Like, other than that, like, stylistically, man, it's awesome. Like, it's a fun action game. And yeah, I heard somebody say, and I totally agree with it, like, it's creepier than a lot of horror games you'll play out there. Like, I mean, again, you see some of the places you're having to traverse and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I mean, it was a really well done game. It's just I suck at it. I mean, that's the only thing I can say about it. Like, that's my big complaint. Like, I wish I didn't suck so bad at that game.
Before I start talking about my current game jam, Kotaku has a really good, especially since you are now within a modern console generation and you're not, you know, you're not much of a PC gamer and you kind of stay in the console land. Kotaku has a really good rotating article that they sort of update periodically of like the top games for each system. Like I had a friend of mine who just got a 3DS and he's like, what game should I get for it? And I was like, go to Kotaku, look up top 3DS games, Kotaku, and you'll find the link. There's one for each of the systems, for PS4, for Xbox One. I even think they have a PC one as well. So if you don't know what to look into, they'll give you a list of all of them are solid games. They may not be your game to play, but they'll all be solid games within their respective genres and things like that. And they'll explain who it's for, who it's not for, and you know what if you're looking for this. Like,
yeah, because I mean that's one of the things that you know I hate sounding like a dinosaur gaming wise a lot of times, but like I see the way that a lot of modern games are kind of like gravitating, and it's just not my thing.
No,
like,
that's fair.
You know, but again, I'm one of those that I'd seen you posted the other day that the remake of Final Fantasy VII is going to be like episodic or something like that. They're trying to squeeze as much money out of me as they can.
Well, I mean, the thing is, and this is what's interesting, and for those who are curious how I fall on it, this is the business Roberto talking right now. The business, you know, it's funny when you talk about gaming, people forget that it is a business and people still need to get paid and that there is staff. You know, people always forget that fact. We never talk about that, but I always remember it. So what it seems like they're trying to do is, like, when Final Fantasy XIII came out, and then became 13-2 and 3 and sort of had this weird overarching story, it almost felt to me that they were trying to make a new Final Fantasy brand. Not so much this franchise that we have, because again, the weird part about the franchise of Final Fantasy is that, you know, because everyone's like, well, did you know, if you see like back in you know, 7, it's like, well, did I need to play the other 6 to get this story? It's like, no, each Final Fantasy is their own self-contained story. You know, it's its own world that you can be part of, and each one is different. They just kind of share some certain characteristics, like the idea of magic and potentially a choke, you know, a yellow bird that
like
you ride
the
on.
The Record of Lotus Warp, you remember that old anime? Like,
yeah.
They had a bunch of different ones, and like, one of them was a continuation of the story, but a lot of the OVAs and stuff, it was like...
Side quests,
it's in the world. That's, you know, it's like, that's, it's like a DC.
Right.
universe. Like, that's, we're in the same place, but we're not anything like each other.
For sure. Whereas Final Fantasy is, they're all...
That's one of the things I like, but man, the more and more you see what goes into games, I could see how, like, that's a shit ton more difficult to try to do, you know, to reinvent the wheel every time.
Even more so, it's a lot harder, and people, again, this is the business side, people. This isn't necessarily the creative side, because ultimately I tend to buy indie games for the reason of this, but that doesn't mean there are no AAA games that are not like this, or there are no indie games that are not like this either. But typically, what can happen is when you pitch a Final Fantasy game, you know, if you talk with anybody about the Final Fantasy franchise, not only will everybody have their favorites, you know, whatever they are, but everyone will always have the one that they hated too. They're like, oh man, I couldn't stand 10. It's like, why couldn't you stand 10? What was wrong with it? Man, that sphere system was just so fucking broken, and it was this, you know.
Man, I don't know if you and me talked about it, man. I recently replayed 10.
Yeah, you told me about this. Yeah, we talked about this, that you had recently played it.
I'll tell you, like, I thought the Final Fantasy VII, like, oh, you could beat the weapons and shit, and, like, golden shows. Like, that side, I thought that side stuff was pretty tedious.
No,
for Final Fantasy X, like, I swear to God, that's one of those, like, oh, you gotta devote, like, weeks of your life to just meticulous, like, oh, I've got to play like 99 games of Blitzball and get these damn scores and this, that, or the other, so Waka can be strong enough to do something when you need him in like some dark Aeon fight that they ported over from the Japanese version.
Right.
Like, dude, I swear to Christ, man, like, I was leveling up so much in that game. I really liked Auron, so I focused a lot on like getting him, you know, everything, the best weapons and whatever. Dude, it got to a point where I couldn't beat some of these side bosses no matter how, like, pumped up my team was. And when I fought the final boss, it took one hit. Like, I wish I was exaggerating. It was so anticlimactic. It was like, oh, I remember this part. This is where, like, I gave up when I was, like, fucking 15 years old or something. I was like, let's see how strong... And then one hit, man. I was so disappointed. I was like, what... Because I had the opportunity to do that for, like... 12 hours before I actually decided to.
Yeah.
Like, I went all through the Omega ruins and, like, yeah. I was tearing that game up and still couldn't beat, like, five of the side bosses, didn't have half of their final weapons and crap. Like, I gave up. I don't know.
Because all the side quests at that point in time were pre the world of achievements and trophies. Like, ultimately,
yeah, they tried to carry that over. I think if memory serves me right, they attached like a trophy system
exactly.
to it. So if you did certain things, you beat certain bosses.
Yeah, like if it's
trophies,
a remake, you get achievement, you get a trophy for it. It's just
yeah,
the way it works.
I saw that for the Silent Hill 2 and 3 remake.
Yeah.
Like,
you have to get like single player. Like that was like that. Because in the back, you know, in the past, it was always like, oh yeah, I beat all the weapons. Like, oh really? Did you? Like, yeah, I totally got the crazy materia stuff too. It's like, oh, rock and roll.
You know what you had to do for that? Like, and I remember like PS1 era. Like, if you made a claim like that, like you had to have the memory card to back that up.
Exactly.
Like, you had to be like, oh, well, let me show you, and you'd get in the airship and you'd fly over where like the golden saucer was, and you'd be like, holy shit, you did beat the world.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have to show that off. And nowadays,
to the
achievement
materia to see if like, oh, you've got the master colors, like, oh my god.
But yeah, because like, you know, and so taking all that into account, the idea that you can have a quote unquote bad version of the franchise because you sort of make every new game, it's becoming very apparent that in gaming and game development, when we have these very, very large budgets, you know, the one I always bring up to mind, that's the recent game, and don't get me wrong, it's made back that money in spades. Fucking GTA 5, Grand Theft Auto 5, I think had like a $500 million budget. Don't get me wrong, it's made like apparently $1 billion and will continue to make a lot more money thanks to all the shit that they're doing with GTA Online. But, you know, that's a good...
No, but, I mean, there's just so much more money on the line.
Right, exactly.
I look at a game like, I mean, we're talking about it, you know, I look at a game like, hell, even like Final Fantasy IX.
Yep.
Where, you know, that was like for even the PlayStation era, like that was some really solid graphics. Like, I, you know, and playing it again is, you know, later on, I really underappreciated that game when I first played it. Like, it really holds well over time. But, like, I mean, you could download the whole file for that game And if it's more, if it's a gig, like, I would be incredibly surprised.
Oh,
like,
no, it's probably not even.
You know, yeah, like, again, like, it's an incredibly small file. So I think, you know, not that a bunch of work didn't go into that, but yeah, not $500 million worth of work or anything.
No,
like,
I mean,
like,
and
nowhere near it.
Probably not. And again, we're in a different era of video gaming. We're in a different era of media in general. You know,
yeah,
I mean, video
sure.
games are but one piece. I mean, you know, they always have been, but now we're in an era where video games are even but one. You know, video games, console video games are but one form of video gaming. I mean, fuck, there's so many games I play on my damn phone at random points. My current jam right now that I'm playing is Bravely Second, the sequel to Bravely Default on my 3DS. You know, we have mobile consoles, iPhones, smartphones that have kind of games, you know, consoles, PCs. Fuck, there's even a game built within the Chrome browser where if it's offline, you can make a dinosaur jump. You know, I'm not saying that's necessarily the most complex of games, but we're in that era where there's a lot of different media. And so, you know, if anyone ever wonders why, you know, comic book movies kind of have a certain feel, certain look, certain things, it's sort of the same idea. And so
they make a shit ton of money, man.
Right. And so,
because, like, I mean, that's one thing that I don't know. And I say this as someone who, like, oh, so you didn't see the second Avengers movie? Like, no, I saw that. Like, you know, I like watching these comic book movies, but it kind of bums me out. It's like a saturation of that stuff.
Yeah.
And not even because, like, there's that, like, inner child geek in me that wants to be pseudo-exclusive about interests and things like that. It's more so, like, damn, dude, like, I just want, like, some cool new ideas.
Yeah.
That doesn't involve, like, you know, like, I was kind of, like, I thought it was kind of cool to find out they're making a Doctor Strange and they're thinking of making a Flash movie. Like, I like those two characters, but I don't know. I'd rather see an awesome, like, horror movie that's original. Like,
for
I'd
sure.
rather see, you know, I'd rather see a new science fiction movie or a new action flick that, you know, again, it's an original idea. Because, yeah, man, like, the other day, yeah. like, I saw Mad Max finally, the one that just came out recently. And I thought it was, I mean, the story, I didn't think much of it. It was very linear, which I know is kind of the point.
Right.
But yeah, like, I thought stylistically it was cool. I thought it was well done, you know, and it was yeah. entertaining and shit. But yeah, I was like, man, you could have just, like, you could have taken the energy in making that film and of trying to do something original. Like, you know, and I get it, but I understand the movie industry, it is what it is. It's a fucking
right.
industry. If it sees that, hey, if we can still get some of the retro ticket sales in there, you know.
Yep.
I mean, hell, why do they keep remaking shit that's coming out of the 90s? Because people with disposable income now grew up in the damn 90s. They want
yep.
to see that crap.
Yeah, and that's sort of where Seven came in. Because I remember when, you know, and I talked about this.
Yeah, and I mean, shit, we were talking about it full circle. Perfect
yeah.
example.
Yeah.
Like, do because, we need to see it again? No, you got the game there, man. It's like, do you need to rewrite, you know, Don Quixote? No, you got Don Quixote. You can just read that.
I mean, the tricky part with Seven is that it's really hard for a new person to play that game. So I understand a remake in that.
I was having a conversation with a student, man, and he was into retro games, and, you know, he liked old school Japanese RPGs. And we were talking about that. He's like, I'd always heard Seven is like, it's like one of the books of the Bible, man. Like, it's a classic, you know, like, you have to. And he's like, I couldn't get through it. He
you
said,
can't.
No, it wasn't that the story wasn't bad or that
it's the graphics
or the backgrounds, you know, were shitty or anything like that. It's like the sprite graphics.
Yeah.
You can't take it seriously. The other day I played Legend of Dragoon, if you remember that thing,
yep.
man. And I remember thinking when I was, or hell, you know, an even better example, I downloaded, and I was really excited too. Mega Man Legends. It came out on the PS.
Oh God, there is some blocky polygons in that game.
Man, I remembered it being a real entertaining game. I had a real good time playing it when it came out, and then I loaded it up, and I looked at it, and I was like, how the hell did I navigate using
yes.
these wonky ass controls?
Yep, tank like, controls, baby.
You know, yeah, tank controls, and not only that, like, the rough shift of view. Like,
mm-hmm.
it was not smooth.
Nope.
It was, you know.
It was a
and,
gut.
Yeah, it really blew my mind that, you know, at the time I looked at this and thought this was amazing shit. You know what's another good one? I looked up some playthroughs of, and it was one of my favorites growing up, man. The Grand Stream Saga.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of the first ones where you got to, you know, like there was 3D movement when you would fight the bosses and you'd fight enemies and stuff. And it had like those anime cutscenes. You know, like I remember really liking it when it came out. And then I watched it played through again, and I was like, damn, dude, this almost feels like the beginning of that Dire Straits video. Like, it's bad. Like,
yeah. No, I mean, especially now, just because we're in an era where we're finally in the era of first generation VR. You know, we're finally there.
Yeah.
Hard to sell to get a kid to play like this very
I gotta think, like, weirdly enough, I think like 7 is in that weird threshold where you can't take it seriously as far as like the sprite graphics. And I want to emphasize that because I think like the graphics during the fights were not great by any means, but like, you know, those were, I think they could hold up okay. But the backgrounds and stuff, like the world map, that was all right. Like, I think that could still kind of hold.
Well, because those are all, I mean, the only big issue with those is that those are all, so for those who've never really known the actual tech behind one of their favorite games,
myself included,
Basically, within that, during that era, that was the era of what we like to call pre-rendered backgrounds. So a lot of the games, and this is so foreign to a lot of modern, like, you take a modern game, let's take Bloodborne. Bloodborne's a great example of a game, because you can rotate the camera around. You don't have to, you know, you're not locked into one camera angle. That's because everything around you is a rendered graphic. You know, it's some type of polygon or millions of polygons, you know, a bunch of polygons that make up this building with the textures on them. That's why you see, why you're able to rotate the camera around and walk around and kind of, at least as, for the most part, 360 degrees and kind of, you know, explore the world. Within 7 and a lot of games back in the 90s, we had what were called pre-rendered background. Basically, it's nothing more than an image where you walk around. Like, the best example I can give in terms of Hollywood, they tend to call those matte paintings. Like, Star Trek Next Generation would do a lot of that shit all the time, where they'd have, like, you know, these characters walking around this, like, small little section over here, but behind them is this giant castle that's been fucking drawn by some artist.
Yeah. Like, and you know, again, I think that stuff, like, that part of it, you know, yeah, it's dated as shit, but, you know, it'll still hold up. But I think, like, 8 would do better, 9 would do better, 10 would do better. Like, the more closer you get to us, the better they'll do.
Yeah,
but
for
sure. But I almost feel like 6 and below would also still kind of hold, you know, hold up. Because now we could almost look at those graphics as like, oh, it's like a retro style.
Yeah, sprite.
And we
sprite,
can kind of tolerate that.
Sprites, you know, tend to hold up more, and a lot of indie games have started kind of hearkening on that style. So I think I agree with you there.
I don't play a lot of indie games, but I see that, you know, they'll use that for certain RPGs, and it's kind of an easier way of, like, you know, we can still do all this cool stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think of almost something like, like Undertale, for example.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's one of those, like, I haven't played it, and I really doubt I'm going to.
Great indie game. Amazing indie game.
You know, I'm not going to lie to you, but I've been hearing just nothing but amazing things about
it. It is. I've talked about it many times, and I've kind of held back on spoiling it in any case, but it's amazing piece of gaming. It's going to be that game I'm going to revisit every year in a certain way and kind of smile while I'm playing it again. Because it's interesting, but yeah, but, you know, you take all that into account, everything that's coming in here, Seven, what they're trying to do, and what at least I feel they're trying to do, is basically try to do what they did with 13, but on a very, very safe bet level. Because even like
I got to think, like, if you were talking to me about it, like, you wouldn't even need to have to, you know, if I was making the calls and everyone decided, yeah, let's make it 3 episodes, you know, that's a safe number, a trilogy.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, the original game had 3 discs. There you go. Like, you might as well just do something like that. Ares dies. Spoiler alert. Sorry, anybody that didn't know that.
Well, because, like, the theory goes actually that we don't know what it's going to be, but the theory goes, because they said they've even are going to add some stuff too. And again, this is just all theory, all speculation. None of this is remotely.
They're going to add shit?
Yeah.
Okay, we got to end this now. I'm going to write an angry email. I'm going to go to Babel Fish and have that translated to Japanese.
Japanese, the worst Japanese you can. No, because, you know.
Wait, I have a Japanese to English dictionary.
There Fine. Are there That's are what, some, I mean, okay, you know, no offense, and again, no offense to Seven. Seven is a pretty good game, but there are some bizarre plot holes in that game, you know, the idea.
Oh my God, no. That's another one, and I know you and I have talked about this before. Like, look, that is a game that is near and dear to my heart. Like, it was, in a lot of ways, that's what got me into RPGs, and, you know, it was a game that I found at a very, like, influential part of my life, you
for
know,
sure, yeah.
growing up and shit. But anybody that looks at that and doesn't say that, like, oh, there's gigantic things that are just, like, wonky as hell about that game. Like, you're ridiculous. There's a whole scene
it's
where...
like, so if he's not Zack, he can't be... He's controlled by Sephiroth? Because, like, you know, there's some...
Part, you know, like, oh, he's just a random person that has, like, Genova cells, and he's from that town, but he's not from that town, and no one realizes, like, dude, you're dressed just like my son. But, like, you know, like, crazy shit like that.
Yeah.
Or hell, not even that. There's a whole section where you have to go find makeup and a dress, and have to slap that on.
That actually
and
was a question. Are they going to keep that in the game?
Because if you do one of the weird side missions, and I was looking at some article, and they mentioned, like, messed up parts of, like, different video games, and I'd forgotten about that. Like,
yep,
it's implied there's a gay orgy that, like, Cloud Strife is, like, forced to be a part of, like, while you're trying to, like, get into that random guy's mansion to save.
There's a lot of weird.
I don't remember.
Ares. Because there's even during that point. No, you're taking Tifa. That's right. Because even during that point of the game, there's if you go into the Bumblebee area to get makeup. Like, I think you see in one of the rooms some, like, really fucked up, like storyline
like
shit.
President Shinra getting spanked or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
there's some weird...
You see some weird things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, not only that, you know, there's... there's just random things that are wrong with it. Things that, you know, again, it's a... And you and me, we again have had these conversations before, like, that, you know, a video game's a good storytelling device. And, like, I'll agree with that. But, like, it's if you're expecting, you know, a plot structure that rivals, you know, some of the best novels, like, ever written, dude, it's a video game.
Yeah.
Like, even though it's supposed to have a coherent storyline and shit, like, I gotta ask, like, you're having these moments of, like, you need to take this seriously. There's a part in that game where you have to go up to a piano, play a random tune, and then you get, like, the greatest set of brass knuckles, like, on the fucking planet.
There's a lot of weird shit.
We are not in a world where, like, you know, people are expecting, you know, again, like, a coherent plot structure 100% of the way through.
Yeah, even with that coming into mind, you know, all that stuff. So, the theory goes that episode one, whatever this game is, because apparently there are going to be three full length AAA games. Like, again, all this is so.
Yeah, and I could kind of see how that works. You know, like second, you know, the first one is ends with the death of Ares, and
the first one may just be in Midgar alone, which would be kind of cool. I would like to actually
cool. Like, and it would be a chance to really explore the city and a lot of different stuff in there. So I could see how that would work. And
because
then
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, well, I would just say, you know, then the second part, you could maybe have, like, the death of Ares in the middle of it, and then maybe have it kind of end, you know, I'm trying to think how the second one ends. Like, you're fighting, the weapons get resurrected for the first time, and you kind of fight.
Yeah.
And then the next part, it could just be, you know, again, kind of doing the final cleaning up and stuff like that, and fight. I wonder if they're going to force you to fight those weapons.
I don't know. Again, well, because ultimately, this is where we started talking about the actual game of Final Fantasy VII. And this is for people who've never played VII, which, you know, the five of you who are way too young to understand. But when the game kind of started, and this was something that pissed off a lot of my friends, was like they thought it was just Midgar. And they were like, oh, I can't explore the world more. What the fuck? And they got really angry. But then when the grand reveal happens, when you get out of Midgar and you see this larger world. Like
that, that same thing happened to me, man.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't pissed that I couldn't get out of the city. I think I'd played enough games to where, like, oh, you're just kind of in this city. You know, I think that'd be – someone gets pissed off at Resident Evil, like, I can't leave the house. Like, well, that's kind of the point, man.
Yeah.
But no, I do remember that when you finally, like, oh, you climb down that cable and then, like, you see the world map and you're like, holy shit. Like, yeah. That was one tiny part of this game? Like, you're kidding.
Exactly. And so that being – that as a kind of grand reveal plot device, that is a definite, like – there's a story beat right there as revealing the world, and that's like the adventure begins. Because usually if you think about a game, you know, and this is where I think 13.2, where the 13 series didn't quite work because it didn't quite figure out that story ahead of time. This is sort of where the advantage happens with 7, because there's already this structure of a story. You know,
yeah, there's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of evidence for me, like in 13, that yeah, it was they wrote a story and someone told them, like, right when they were getting towards the end of it, like, oh, you know what, we're gonna see if we can't stretch it to 2 more games, so add shit.
Yeah, that's
and
what
it
I'm
was
saying.
Like, yeah, and it's one of those things that me, I'm being critical of myself. You know, you write a long time, you look at your old shit, and you just kind of shake your head at it.
Yeah,
I think the first fantasy world I ever tried to really create, that was one of the issues I ran into. Like, I went in there thinking, like, okay, one novel is going to be kind of like the root structure for this kind of world and stuff like that. But you could tell in certain places, or at least I could anyways, where it's like, oh, I'm playing catch up with myself. Like, I'm having to explain something that I thought would be a cool throwaway at one point, and now it's, now it's something that it's a plot device. It's like,
exactly.
Shit, you know, which is, man, I've got this other fantasy novel in my mind right now that I have not put one word on the page about it. But all I'm doing is thinking of, like, the world, the characters, like, I'm setting that shit up in my mind, so it's like, I don't even have to, you know, not even have to worry about it.
Yeah, because a lot of...
Speaking of, the one I'm working on right now, man, was that a bullshit story that we came up with, like, on the podcast, or were we just shooting the shit some other time?
Oh, God.
Because I'm working on Neo Laredo right now.
Yeah,
right?
You told me this. Yeah, you were working on it. It might have been on the podcast.
Yeah, for those of you that, those of you that don't know, there's like 4 people that do, so the world. Yeah, man, it's like story of Laredo, but a kind of Akira style set in the future. And man, I gotta tell you, like, I'm at the beginning of chapter 4. So far, man, this is like 30,000 words I've already got down, man.
Oh,
that's
damn.
Like
that's hardcore.
Oh, baby. Oh, sorry, man. Wife just got home.
It's okay. The great, but, it's always great to have that. Daryl, leave it in. Well, no, because it's so funny, you know, thinking all these sort of things and everything else that kind of goes on it. It's when you start to look at stories as stories, and you start looking at and analyzing things. Like, you as a writer, of course, you know, you'll write a lot, and so you get to analyze stories. But even
it's
looking at
the first man, I can't enjoy anything. Like,
but
that,
that's
just,
not a, like for me. I still am able to, like, let me put it this way. Like, movies, I understand the business that goes into a film. I understand the production that goes into a film. Fuck, I even understand at this point things like, you know, lighting, cinematography, and all this kind of things that go like that. But even with a game, I understand budget, development costs, and all these different elements that go. But I can still enjoy a game. I can still enjoy a AAA title. But it's very interesting when... Like when 7 when they announced that whole thing, and I'm just sort of bringing it back because we're almost out of time here. When they announced that whole thing, I was like, "Oh, cool! I didn't expect them to pull that pin." And it was so funny seeing everyone just like, "Oh my god, they're making 7 again!" And I was like, "I mean, you guys know that it's not necessarily going to be the game that you remember, not in a bad way, but because this is modern AAA development time, people. This isn't we're
man,
a different
like,
era of gaming."
You know, I think of, you know, this is just me, someone who's not well-versed in this crap, thinking out loud. Like, if you were to throw Final Fantasy VII into the graphical level of, like, a Bloodborne or something like that, where let's say you go that kind of an RPG route, and you have, like, let's say your team almost acts as, like, your support, like, you know, like Kingdom Hearts style or something like that. Dude, if you, I gotta think anybody that's gonna complain, like, oh my god, this is what the game is now, after the first fight where they get to throw down, like, lunatics as Cloud Strife with a Buster Sword, they're just gonna be like, okay, you know what, yeah, it's not the same thing, but this is pretty damn awesome.
I think so, too, because I think that a lot of people don't quite understand, and I understand this even as a guy that loves turn-based RPGs, it's playing one on my 3DS, Bravely Second. I understand very, very well that that game works there, and even then, the only thing that makes that game even worth a damn is the encounter slider. Like, if the encounter slider wasn't there, I might not be playing it. Because let me tell you, having the ability to just say, fuck it, turn off all random encounters, and it's like, you're not going to get any experience, though. Don't worry, I'll turn it back on to 100 and grind for an hour or two.
No, that was something like... that was something
I just want to walk to the damn town I need to get to.
That was something that annoyed me when I was watching. I watched a speed run of Bloodborne to make myself feel like shit. man, like, the world record's like an hour and 14 minutes or something like that. Like, dude, it took me an hour and 14 minutes to get to the first boss. Like, easy. But no, it seemed that, like, me, I see an enemy, it's like, no, this guy's gotta die. Like, and these people are just like, oh, we literally are killing absolutely nothing other than bosses.
Got it.
And we're just kind of jumping and rolling and crap like that. Like, to me, that it also shows, like, there's a commitment to gaming that is just not within me.
No, I mean, like, it's speedrunners. Speedrunners are a very, very amazingly crazy bunch. I tend to look more only because speedrunners, I look for, like, skill, and I know how they do certain things, but I tend to watch a lot more of the tool-assisted speedruns, sort of the ones that are done in emulation and take advantage of weird save states and glitches and, like, pinpoint pixel precision that you can by just sort of slow-motioning things and doing weird shit like that. Where it's like, you do a glitch and you get this, or it's like, because you have, you know, the recovery thing. Like, I was watching a tool-assisted speedrun of Super Metroid that was 100%. And it was like, wait, you can't go in that area. You don't have the suit yet. Like, you'll die. And it's like, no, I won't, because I'm able to make sure that I get all the things I need. It's like, all right. And he didn't. It was so funny to see certain things and not even notice, like, oh, in that area, you don't take any damage. Interesting, you know, because you should have already had the suit by then.
Like, you know, it's one of those things. Who could have ever, perceived that, you know, there'd be not just the culture around it, but the weird niche cultures about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and yeah, I see it in, you know, people that they'll put up, like, old walkthroughs of, like, old ass games. Like, I mean, I go to YouTube, I see the Grandstream Saga played in its completion.
Yep.
And I know it's a person that, like, they almost feel like they're putting a contribution, like, you know what, this game's not going to get forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it's out there and someone ever gets interested, like, here's the whole game for you to look at again, you know? And I think it's really weird, but at the same time, like, I really, like, I appreciate it at the same time. Like, I know on my watch later list, and let's see, whenever the hell I get to it, I have the original Brave Fencer Musashi, because I never got an opportunity to play that game when I was young. So it's like, hey, you know, I've always heard it was interesting. Take a look at it. It's there, because, man, there are other people out there that they either, you know, they loved it when they were young and they wanted to make sure that, like, it in a weird way kind of lives on.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of where those, I think those kind of long plays kind of exist.
Speedrunners, I think it's almost them spitting in the eye of, like, these developers. Like, you want to do something that's going to take me take forever.
I think it's more of, like I would take speedrunners as more of a, because what's interesting about speedrunners is that, it, to me, a lot of those, when you have a thing, is like, there's like the summer games done quick that they do everything for, like, charity and everything else like that. I think when it comes to speedrunners, what's interesting about them is that it will be things that I didn't know quite existed, like certain, because the beauty part about doing a ROM or a console game, like a classic retro game, you know, like a Nintendo or Super Nintendo game, is that since those are sort of, for lack of better words, etched in, you know, permanency, like while there are different versions of Final Fantasy VI in terms of, like, version updates and stuff like that, like, you almost have to kind of study that shit and know about it. Yeah. For the most part, that never happens, and most of the games are that are on a ROM that are, you know, of that era, there was never another version. So there's a glitch there. There's a glitch forever. And what's cool about a lot of speedrunners, they'll take advantage of those glitches to do like really weird things. Like in Zelda 2, you can do some strange stuff if you turn into a fairy, like if you're on the top of a roof or something, just because it happened. And so it's kind of it's interesting.
God, how could you have foreseen like, oh, some random person's going to try to do this one thing? Like, yeah. Why should we even bother testing it? And then, yeah, some weird ass crap happens.
Right. And it's interesting how certain speedruns, like one of the runs, I think like at one point had taken advantage of a glitch, and then it was in a glitch state and somehow took damage, and it was then pushed out of the glitch state because of it. And they're like, okay, guys, well, that's the end of the run. And he didn't succeed. Where it gets really cool. And they've been doing this recently with Super Mario World, where they've determined ways of like modifying the buffers and actually being able to inject, you know, essentially inject code into the actual RAM and things like that, that people have actually injected like full mini games into Super Mario World. Like people, I think someone had made. And it's like really crazy shit because people have done it some humans have done it, but a lot of times it's really done with like machines or tools, speedruns, stuff like that, where by doing certain things and doing certain manipulations, you shift certain values, certain bytes and shit like that. Like you're literally hacking the game as it's playing. People have made like Flappy Bird within Super Mario World. It sounds crazy, but it's insane that's sort of where this community has come to. I think at one point someone had a robot, an Arduino programmed little thing, microcontroller hooked in a Super Nintendo controller that did all the motions really quick and essentially made a level editor for Super Mario World in like this micro bite size code.
Man. That shows me like, oh god, so many people thinking on a different wavelength than I am.
It's
man.
Crazy though, but it's so for me like on a software development side, like that's so fucking fascinating. And even on like the idea that because you're studying a value and you know that if you do this, it shifts this register in RAM, and if you do it this way, it'll actually allow you to, you know, overflow that register in RAM and start writing shit into memory and fucking the game up. But because you are actually writing commands in assembly, that it interprets that assembly. It's so weird, but it's so fucking cool that's being done. Like people have made Snake, people have made, you know, Nibbles and all that kind of shit. It's so fucking amazing that's the kind of thing that happened. We are out of time, audio. We've hit the hour mark, dude.
Oh, Sam. Yeah, man.
Well, Mario, if people want, of course, you're always welcome to come back to the show. But if people actually
want
to check,
you want, man.
Yeah, if people want to actually check out the writing, even though we only, you know, kind of glanced on about it, Neil Lurie, maybe we'll get you on when you finish the world and done
oh,
it.
Oh shit! Well, then I'll see you in 6-7 months, something like that, man. This thing, like, you know, it's a beast. Like I'm personally surprised that, like, you know, again, I got 30,000 words down. And I haven't even introduced some, you know, really important characters. But, man, you know, having a good time with it, so thank God for that shit.
Well, if people want to follow and maybe check up on the progress of you, or maybe want to check out your other writings, your other musings, if you will, as an author.
There's plenty of ways to do it.
How can they do it?
You can go to www.marioemartinez.com. I update that as much as I can with new writings. You know, there's links to, you know, publications online, links to the books, like San Casimiro and Twin Burials. You can find me on Twitter. I always forget my damn handle. It's I think it's Mario E. Martinez 39 or Mario Martinez 39 or something like that. I'm also on Facebook, just Mario E. Martinez author page. Yeah, so follow me. You know, again, I try to update it as much as I can, but I've learned something. People wait for quality. You just throw a bunch of shit and see what sticks on the wall, and not the best policy, at least what I think. But what the hell do I know?
It's all good. Well, of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404 on the Twitters. If you want to check out previous episodes of this podcast, you can head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There are fun links like show notes, our Twitter account, which is 8bitlifepodcast, and, of course, other shows in the network. And after you've bought all of Mario's books and supported him and you have, like, $5 left over, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife and have this show help this show become bigger, better, and more awesomer. So that's it for today. See you next time. Talk nothing. Keep out something completely and utterly random. Bye, people.
Peace.
This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.